morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Attorney Brian Pickle. I represent Defendant Appellant Eric Ebert in this case. Mr. Ebert's case, to me, seems quite simple. Either there was sufficient evidence of intentional activity before the district court to warrant the requirement of instructing the jury on self-defense, or there was insufficient evidence of intentional activity, in which case the district court, Judge Shabazz, should have granted our motion for judgment of acquittal. At the close of evidence, one of the first matters taken up in the jury instruction case was whether or not the court would be instructing the jury on the issue of self-defense. Mr. Ebert was charged with a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 111-1A1. This subsection, is essentially obstructing an officer forcefully, requires the United States to prove intentional activity on the part of the defendant. Self-defense, similarly, requires the proof of some sort of intentional activity. When asked for his commentary on the necessity or requirement of a self-defense instruction, the United States Attorney responded, and this is apparent in the trial record, "The defendant is claiming none of the acts were intentional. It was all an accident. That's different than self-defense that goes to question of intent. That's not carrying the burden of persuasion in the first instance, so I don't believe he's entitled to the self-defense instruction."
Wasn't the alleged confession by the government actually just an argument that the defendant's proffer of self-defense instruction, Mr. Ebert's proffer of the self-defense instruction was inconsistent with his own representations of his actions?
I don't believe that was what the United States Attorney was arguing, with all due respect, Your Honor.
Didn't he say that he didn't intend to do anything?
Mr. Ebert testified that he didn't intend to kick at anyone. He was very clear in his testimony.
Okay, he didn't intend to kick at anybody.
Correct. But
well, then his self-defense would be kicking at somebody, wouldn't it?
No, Mr. Ebert's self-defense was in the forceful way he was struggling to get away from the guards and the
physicians. That included kicking.
Well, in Mr. Ebert's opinion, in his testimony, Mr. Ebert was struggling and not attempting to strike anyone. He was intentionally moving himself and flailing his
in
legs.
In self-defense?
Yes, in self-defense. Because
he was just moving, not intending to hit anybody in self-defense?
He was struggling. He was
struggling to keep from being kept where he wanted to avoid doing what they wanted him to do.
To avoid being sedated is what
right.
He testified to.
Yes. That's not self-defense.
Well, he was forcefully struggling. And what a defendant is required to prove under self-defense, or at least to introduce evidence of, is not that he intentionally struck someone, but that he acted intentionally in a forceful way. And that's where I think the district court and the United States Attorney were misinterpreting the testimony. Mr. Ebert was very clear that he intentionally struggled. He did not want to be sedated. He did not want to be held down and sedated. He was intending to struggle. He denied attempting to kick a guard. And that's true. He didn't intend to kick someone, but he did intend to use the force that he felt was reasonably necessary to avoid being sedated. And when the United States Attorney came back to that, he wasn't arguing that Mr. Ebert had not met his burden of persuasion there. He was arguing that there was no proof of any intentional activity. And I think the record clearly belies that. The guards testified that Mr. Ebert appeared to be intentionally kicking at them. Mr. Ebert was very clear that he intentionally struggled. He never said he accidentally struggled to get off the table. He never said he accidentally attempted to get out of the physician's assistant's office. And so in that respect, there was evidence of intentional activity. At that point, that's when the United States argued that the record was devoid of any kind of intentional activity, ignoring the testimony of the several prison officers and the physician's assistant who testified, and ignoring the corroboration by Mr. Ebert that he was struggling and feared a shot. And the district court in this case bought into the United States Attorney's argument 100%. He convinced the United States and he convinced the district court that there was no proof of intentional activity.
Well, I mean, in establishing the unlawful force aspect of self-defense, what you argued in your brief was that he believed sedation was going to be used and that unlawfulness of that potential issue could be inferred because the guards didn't tell him what was going on, right?
That's correct.
Right. Well, how could that be enough to infer that the guard's actions are unlawful.
Well, several of the guards testified that they never heard or mentioned anything about sedation. And Mr. Ebert had heard that other inmates had been sedated. And you have to look at the longer record. He had not been told where he was being taken. He testified that regular procedure, and in his opinion what would always happen, is that upon refusing the breathalyzer test, he would be taken to the segregated housing unit. Instead, he was taken somewhere else where he ends up in a medical office, and they still don't tell him what's going on. And when he says, "I don't want to be sedated," most of the guards testified that in response to this, "I don't want to be sedated," they attempted to pin him down and handcuffed him and cut his shirt off of him. And I think you can infer, looking at this in a light favorable to the defendant, that he says, "I'm going to be sedated. I don't want to be sedated."
Does he have a right to refuse sedation?
If the sedation is unlawful, and he believes it to be unlawful, he has a right to use a reasonable amount of force. Yes, he does have that right. And the guard's failure to say, "You're not going to be sedated," or "You're going to be sedated and the prison allows us to do that," could lead Mr. Ebert to reasonably believe that the sedation was unlawful. And that's exactly what's required in this case. Not that Mr. Ebert know beforehand 100% that the sedation is unlawful. If you look at the case of United States versus Grimes, a Seventh Circuit case from 1964, the defendant was being taken into a prison office as another inmate was being let out. And this defendant going into the office, Grimes, hears a scuffle behind him and turns around and sees the guards beating the other inmate. And he intervenes, he grabs the guards, he begins assaulting them. And what was held there is that Grimes could use the defense of others, which is similar to self-defense. You can defend others to the extent you can defend yourself. Even though Grimes didn't know how the altercation had started, what he saw at that moment appeared to be an unlawful use of force. And so Mr. Ebert's reasonable belief, at the moment he's in the physician's assistant's office, he believes he's going to get a shot. No one tells him he's not going to. And they're pinning him down and holding him down and not saying anything about whether they could do this or whether he has to submit. They're just remaining silent and handcuffing him. So at that point, I think Mr. Ebert can form the specific idea that this is something that they're not telling me what's going on, and they're not telling me why they can do this to me. They're going to do something unlawful to me. And that, I think, is sufficient evidence of the unlawfulness and the unreasonable force that he's required to show at that point to put this in front of a jury. And a jury can decide that his beliefs aren't reasonable. A jury could believe the guards and say, well, they weren't going to sedate him. But what didn't happen here is the jury never got that opportunity because the district court didn't believe Mr. Ebert, and the United States attorney didn't believe Mr. Ebert. And that's where this really all focuses, is right at the self-defense instruction conference prior to submitting this case to the jury. I know the district court had come back after on motion for judgment of acquittal and said, essentially, that's not the only reason I denied this instruction. But with all due respect to Judge Shabazz, that is the only reason he denied the instruction. He said he didn't try to kick anyone, and if he didn't attempt to kick anybody, he certainly wasn't attempting to defend himself. That's verbatim what the court said. He didn't address the unreasonableness of the beliefs or the alleged unreasonableness. He didn't address the unlawful force issue. I think in this situation, the court has clearly made a decision prior to submitting the case to the jury that there was no evidence of intentional activity. And if the court was incorrect in that decision at that point, Mr. Ebert should have been allowed to present a self-defense argument to the jury. If the court was correct in that there was no proof of intentional activity on Mr. Ebert's part, the only response at that point was to dismiss the case. Unless there's any further questions, I'll reserve some time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Mr. Pagel. Mr. Jarosz?
And please, the court. My name is Peter Jarosz. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Western District. I was also the attorney at the trial. In this particular case, the district court committed no error in denying the motion for acquittal or the denying the defendant's requested instruction. Basically, the defendant's motion for acquittal is based upon an alleged concession by the government during the settlement of jury instructions, in which the government was characterizing what appeared to be the defendant's argument, which was basically I was drunk. I got in. I was trying to get away. I was.
How do you get a gallon and a half of wine in a prison? By the way, just academically.
Well, academically, actually, that was brought up during the trial. It's a common phenomena, and in fact, it's FCI
officers. Is it customary in Wisconsin jails, or I mean, is it just?
It's actually, I'm embarrassed to say, it's customary in FCI.
Do they serve bratwurst too? As long as it's,
I don't know if they do that, but they have plenty of the homemade wine. And Your Honor, what occurred here, and in characterizing it, albeit perhaps not the real basis for denial of the motion, or rather for the denial of the jury instruction, clearly what occurred here was a situation where a defendant, having a gallon and a half to 2 gallons of wine, got drunk, the party was over, and at that point, clearly he's starting to resist and become agitated. The issue is not really whether or not the government conceded something, because that's not realistic. Otherwise, the government will always be put in a position where if they were arguing against the defendant's position, they would be conceding their own case, all the evidence that was presented, and there's really no clear admission in any of it. The bottom line is that there's simply no authority for the type of circumstances for that to be a concession on behalf of the government, or somehow for that to be the basis of a motion for acquittal. On the issue for the jury instruction, which I really think is what the defendant is complaining about, Judge Chabaz correctly noted both at the sentencing in the motion for new trial based on the denial of jury instruction, as well as in his order, that the reason for the denial of the jury instruction was that the defendant proved nothing in terms of it being unlawful conduct. And the defendant cited the Grimes decision. It's important to note in that decision that Grimes also notes that in that case the defendant asserted a privilege to intervene on behalf of one who merely assert a privilege to intervene on behalf of someone who merely questions the authority of the prison guards to place him in solitary confinement or carry out any other order. In other words, it can't be the situation where, because the defendant has subjective fear about being sedated, that he then gets to bring up a defense and start questioning. In the same vein, not only was there no evidence that this was going to occur, there's no evidence that sedating somebody was unlawful in any event. And on those bases, the government would ask that the district court's decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Droz. Mr. Pagel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly in rebuttal, the United States made the claim that the motion for judgment of acquittal was based solely on the United States' concession. The motion for judgment of acquittal argues in the alternative, as does this appeal, that either the United States conceded the case and it should be dismissed, or the evidence was sufficient to warrant the self-defense instruction. The United States raises again, as they did in the briefing, this idea that somehow my argument would put the United States in a position where they can't argue against the defendant's defense. And that's just simply incorrect. As pointed out in the briefs, Assistant U.S. Attorney DeRose had the opportunity to argue the lawfulness of the force being used by the guards, or argue that Ebert had not presented reasonable beliefs. He chose not to do that. He chose to base his entire argument on his assumed lack of intentional activity on the record. So the United States would be free to argue any elements of self-defense, with the exception of intent, where the United States is required to prove intent. And the United States cited also to Grimes for the proposition that there is no self-defense to resist lawful orders. That's not what was happening in this case. Mr. Ebert, as the transcript shows, was cooperative with the guards when they took him to the office. He was not resistant, although he didn't want to take the breathalyzer. He was friendly and laughing. When he
was happy.
I'm sorry?
After a gallon and a half of wine, you'd be a little happy yourself.
I imagine I would, Your Honor.
As a dog.
His resistance began only, if I can finish up, when he thought he was going to be sedated. And it ceased immediately after it became apparent he wasn't going to. There was no orders that he was resisting.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pagel. Thank you, Mr. Droz. Mr. Pagel, a special thanks to you for accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Ebert.
Thank you.